I'll have you know the contents of that dumpster are private. You stick your nose in, you'll be violating attorney dumpster confidentiality.
I just wanted to say hello.
Oh. Hello.
All right, we're done.
You think the language in the Second Amendment is clear enough? You know, about the right to bear arms?
Of course it's clear. Every American has the right to hang a pair of bear arms on their wall. How could that possibly be misconstrued?
All right, fantastic then. Wait, you know what? Before we send this to the printer, let's take that abortion thing out.
Oh, come on. I move for a hearing on the matter.
What? You want me to have a special motion on the admissibility of the word asshole?
Well, let me have ass then. That's close enough.
What law school did you go to?
I'll agree to it, Your Honor.
You will? Why?
I don't want any interlocutory appeals.
What are you, a comedy team?
Welcome to Opening Arguments, the podcast that breaks down the law behind all the news stories you care about. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hey, everybody. I'm Liz Dye. With me is Andrew Torres, and this is Opening Arguments, episode 706.
Hey, Liz. How you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I am really good. I am very, very excited about today's episode. And, you know, you and I have been kind of going back and forth. We are still trying to work out, you know, the Patreon bonuses, the regular listener stuff that we're going to do. So we're going to try something out that you and I were thinking about. Just about every episode we have, this is equal responsibility here, I think. Well, not equal.
No, it's not.
This is,
no, it's not.
This is joint and several liability here. We wind up with bonus rabbit trail material that just, you know, winds up on the cutting room floor as we try and keep these episodes to an hour. So we're going to try out leaving in those extended discussions for patrons. And so we're going to do that with today's episode because we have a really, really fun discussion that sort of didn't quite fit into the main sequence. So if you are a patron of the show, send us a message on Patreon and let us know what you think about the extended episodes. And obviously, you're a regular listener. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We hope you continue to enjoy it. And with that in mind, you want to get on to the show?
I do indeed.
All right.
Welcome to Opening Arguments,
the show that does not advocate the cool crime of robbery.
So, one of the things that I think even those of us on the left forget, right, just because it's such a fire hose of nonsense, is that the entire Trump presidency began, continued, ended, continues today as a grift, right?
And, totally.
And for some inexplicable reason, like, the mainstream press doesn't remind us every single day by shouting, these people are criminals, traitors, morons, you know, whenever they cover Trump, because that's it. That's the universe of people who work for Donald Trump. So we're here to remind you of that fact.
I mean, that is indeed my day job, is to remind people of that fact all day long.
I said mainstream, but I will take that
no
under admonishment. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. I'm consonant
the
with that.
The non-Liz Dye portions of the media.
Exactly. So today's story is about Michael Flynn and his dumb, stupid lawsuit against the U.S. government for malicious prosecution. I think the air quotes are implied. And as we've been talking about this week, I think this highlights one of the differences in our approach, because as you always say, you read the case from the back. And as a columnist, I usually read from the front just to understand the facts and the parties first. Sometimes after that, I skip to the remedy section at the end. But since so much of my job is to make fun of garbage lawsuits that are basically DOA, in some sense, the remedy they're asking for is like irrelevant. OK, so here Flynn is asking for $50 million. That's not a real number. This is not a real remedy at all.
Counterpoint, Dominion Voting Systems is asking for $1.6 billion. And that's not entirely real as a remedy, but it's still a real lawsuit, right?
Sure. Obviously, the dollar amount is the only way that you can tell that something's a fake lawsuit, but it is often an indicator. And this case, this Flynn case, is kind of a perfect heuristic for our differing approaches, because you started at the back and came up with that epic Twitter thread talking about all the ways this case is procedurally nonsense. And I can't wait to walk the listeners through that in the second part of the show. Whereas I took one look at the Flynn versus U.S. caption, assumed it was going to be hopelessly defective as a legal, you know, document. And then I dove right in on page one because the Trumpland lawsuits are always like chock full of amazing copy if you say, I don't know, write about this whack-assery for a living. And so in the first couple of pages, they're always going to be counted on for something so preposterous and over the top that it'll just make your lead pop.
And in fairness to you, this one was fertile ground, right? Like, so I love the freeform opener about, you know, the fall of a once venerable institution for which, actual quote, the only way back to public trust and for justice to be done for General Flynn is to hold accountable the United States whose agents and agencies ignored their statutory and constitutional duties. Wow.
Yeah, right. And we've talked about this before on the show on episode 689, which you aptly titled Lawsuit or Interpretive Dance. You approach them as a lawyer reading a complaint, and I approach them as performative stunts staged on the federal docket. So for me, the fact that it's gobbledygook procedurally is kind of an afterthought. But of course, you know, there's more than one right way to point and laugh at dumpster fire litigation.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, if we did this as a video podcast, like I would insert the why not both meme right here. Right?
Yeah. And indeed it is both. So, OK, just in case you eternal sunshine this guy off your internal hard drive, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn was a decorated military figure who became head of the Defense Intelligence Agency in 2011, only to be forced out in 2014 for behavior which was described variously as chaotic, insubordinate, and untruthful. He also showed an affinity for Russia even then, which his colleagues found to be alarming. Or as Flynn put it in his complaint, he, quote, had a reputation as a hands-on disruptor at DIA who had publicly excoriated the politicization of the intelligence community and who had made clear his desire to overhaul the national security structure and the interagency process.
If by politicization of the intelligence community you mean having a pro-US and anti-Russia our geostrategic enemy bias, like that seems to me to be, I don't know, the kind of politicization that maybe the 2012 Republican presidential candidate described from the main stage of the debate. I don't think he means that.
I think he means witch hunt. Witch hunt, and Russia hoax. Anyway, as a civilian...
God, how did we wind up at the place where I sound like Ronald Reagan circa 1985? Anyway...
No, you don't, because you have all your marbles.
fair point. Anyway.
As a civilian, Flynn immediately cashed in on his military service, working as an unregistered lobbyist, including for the Turkish government. So for years, Turkey has demanded that the U.S. extradite Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, whom President Erdogan holds responsible for the 2016 failed coup. Gulen lives in the Poconos. You're just going to have to take my word for it, because he does.
Yeah, put a pin in that one, okay? And look, for all of Flynn's howling about being the most innocent man in the world, like, he actually did retroactively register as a foreign agent of the Turkish authoritarian government in March of 2017. And in fact, the Wall Street Journal, that, you know, bastion of liberalism, reported that Flynn entertained an offer from a Turkish cutout to, you know, black helicopter Gulen out of the country for $15 million, right? Because it's still all about the grift, if he couldn't get the U.S. to extradite him legally. So, yeah, there is a reason that Obama told Trump, of all the people he shouldn't hire, Michael Flynn was the guy he shouldn't hire the most, right? But of course, Trump ignored that because, you know, Kenyan tan-suited usurper. But ugh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. So after the Russian GRU hacked and dumped DNC emails to help Trump in 2016, the Obama administration...
Which 100% is the story of what happened. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
Totally happened, right? So the Obama administration levied sanctions and kicked out a bunch of Russian agents during the transition period, right after the election, before Trump was sworn in. And Flynn, who was already under FBI investigation for his many contacts with Russian government officials, got picked up on wiretaps multiple times in December of 2016 and January 2017, urging Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak not to retaliate for those sanctions and promising that Trump would ease the sanctions once he got into office. Flynn also wanted...
That's against the law.
I mean, maybe. Yeah, I think so. And at the behest of Jared Kushner, Flynn wanted Russia to vote against a resolution at the UN condemning Israel. And indeed, the Russian ambassador did agree to both of those requests. You know, Flynn got his way.
Yeah, that's right. And my little aside, again, we have talked about this on the show, but that violates the Logan Act, right? When you are not president to conduct foreign policy on behalf of someone who is not the president. And, you know, yes, Logan Act prosecutions are pretty rare. Hatch Act prosecutions are pretty rare. Like, Trump seemed to have the market cornered on stuff that's against the law, but rarely prosecuted. But anyway, remember all the Republican hysteria about unmasking, right?
Indeed, I do.
Yeah, I thought perhaps you might. That was because the Obama administration wanted to figure out which American civilian was negotiating foreign policy with our Russian adversaries against the policy of the sitting president.
Yeah, I'm good with that kind of unmasking. That's cool.
It should.
Yeah. So on January 12th, of 2021, right before Trump took office, the Washington Post reported on Flynn's conversations with Ambassador Kislyak, and Flynn denied them, which was bad, but then it got worse when Trump went through with his promise to make Flynn his national security advisor after he was sworn in on January 20th, because Flynn was now compromised by having taken a public position which the Russians knew to be untrue. He could quite easily be blackmailed. Right. And obviously, that freaked out everyone in the intelligence community. So on January 24th, two FBI agents went to interview Flynn and ask him about the calls. Or, as he describes it in this complaint, they ambushed General Flynn with a perjury trap to remove him as an obstacle to the continuing Crossfire Hurricane investigation and as a threat to their own jobs and the entrenched intelligence apparatus. End real quote.
Yeah. So two things. One, Flynn has had a security clearance since, you know, 5 minutes after his voice changed. So he knows damn well you can't lie to the FBI, even if they've just had you in for a friendly chat. So nevertheless, that's what he did. During that voluntary interview, he repeated his denial that he had made those calls, which is pretty dumb because they knew he had. And and look, while there was some debate in the FBI over how to handle that problem, there is no debate that what they did was perfectly legal and not entrapment of any sort. That's the second point. I have been wanting to talk about what a perjury trap actually is since, you know, forever. Because look, this is something liberal legal scholars have been legitimately concerned about for four decades that, of course, Trumpers have, you know, seized on and completely twisted out of control.
All right, Ronald Reagan, let me get my headlamp for this spelunking. No, you're not Ronald Reagan. I'm only teasing.
That's a twofer. Okay. Okay. The first mainstream use of the phrase perjury trap that I know of comes from a 1981 law review article in the Penn Law Review. It's called The Perjury Trap. It was written by Bennett L. Gershman, who is a law professor at Pace University. He is frequently called, quote, the leading authority in the country on prosecutorial misconduct. So, you know, our kind of people, right? And here's Professor Gershman's concern, which, again, I want to stress, despite the fact that it's Trump land that's always talking about it, is 100% a valid concern among prosecutorial misconduct. And that is when you have ex parte examination of a witness before a grand jury. Stop me if you see some salient differences between this and every time the Trump people call it out. But look, you have the ex parte examination of a witness before a grand jury. And especially if the prosecutor thinks of that witness as a potential likely target, right? But has assured the witness, oh, hey, you're still just a witness at this point, right? To try and throw them off the scent. In that situation, remember, when you are called to testify before the grand jury, you do not have the right to be represented by counsel, right? There's nobody else in there with you. That's the whole ex parte part, right? And so I'm just going to quote from Professor Gershman directly because I think he set this hypothetical up really neatly. He says, suppose a grand jury has been conducting an inquiry into espionage. Okay. A prominent individual is subpoenaed and questioned about alleged communist activities occurring many years earlier. Because the statute of limitations on those earlier activities has expired, the witness cannot be prosecuted for any substantive offense. The witness denies past involvement in communist activities, which then makes it present-day perjury for which he is indicted.
Right.
That's what Professor Gershman calls the prototypical perjury trap. He continues, the prosecutor suspected the witness of past criminal activity. Proof existed to bear out that suspicion, but the witness couldn't be prosecuted for the substantive underlying crime. So it could be argued that what the prosecutor did, you know, frustrated at his inability to indict the witness for a substantive crime, those are his words, he, quote, purposefully sought to induce the witness to testify in a manner that the prosecutor knew could be contradicted by independent evidence, even if that evidence couldn't be used to prosecute, thereby subjecting the witness to prosecution for perjury. In other words, as a hypothetical prosecutor might candidly acknowledge, if we can't get him for a real crime, we'll get him for perjury. And that's a perjury trap.
Right. That's not giving an interview to the FBI at all.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Particularly not, you know, when you are a career civil servant. Right. Look, to steal about this, if you squint, you might say, well, look, Flynn wasn't represented by counsel in that interview, although he could have lawyered up and,
yes,
you know, probably
and
should have
called him and said, you can be represented by counsel if you like, and we'll do this through the DOJ. But Flynn did not want to do it through the DOJ. And I think we can all guess why.
Well, he was also paying Covington and Burling legal fees, so maybe he tried to save a few bucks. But look, like the most important salient difference here is that Flynn's lie to the FBI is the crime.
No, that's not why he didn't do it. He didn't want to do it because he was lying.
Lots of reasons. But like, here's the most important salient difference, right? And that is Flynn's lie about not having had contacts with the Russians is the crime that the government was interested in, right?
Right.
This is not the alternative to prosecuting him for some real crime that you couldn't get because it occurred 10 years. Like, if the government thinks you're lying about a thing and then they bring you in to talk about that thing and you keep lying to them, that definitionally cannot be a perjury trap unless you think every time a criminal defendant is indicted for any crime is a perjury trap. And we might have some listeners who would, I mean, that's a defensible philosophical position, but it's probably not one that, you know, conservatives would like to endorse. Yeah.
Right. I mean, look, Flynn's theory of this case has always been that he just plumb forgot those multiple conversations he'd had less than 4 weeks before with the Russian ambassador, even though those conversations had been the subject of a media frenzy and he had spent weeks denying that those conversations ever existed. Like, yeah, I think there's a reason he didn't want to put the DOJ in on this little conversation because he was lying. He knew he was lying. I mean, it's the whole thing's ridiculous. He doesn't even bother to pretend in this lawsuit that what he told the FBI was true. I mean, his complaint refers to supposed misstatements. And then he yada, yada, yadas that, quote, as a result, on February 13, 2017, General Flynn was forced to resign from his position as NSA. That, he says, was only the beginning of the torment in store for General Flynn at the hands of defendants, agencies, and agents in their crusade to destroy President Trump and his allies. I mean, stop. This is nonsense. You know, he's very clearly lying. He just says, oh, well, you caught me doing it, and it's not fair that you arrested me for it.
Right, right. And look, here's the second half of how the DOJ definitely did not set a perjury trap for Flynn, right? Because Flynn, on the present facts that are admitted and uncontested, right, he could easily have been charged with violating the Foreign Agents Registration Act, that's FARA, 22 U.S.C. Section 618, that carries a statutory maximum of 5 years in prison. Or if the government was feeling, you know, not even frisky, just kind of normal. They could have, and in my view, 100% should have, indicted him under 18 U.S.C. 951, right? So the FARA crime is failure to disclose the fact that you're an agent of Turkey on your application. It's a paperwork crime, but, you know, it's pretty important paperwork, carries a five-year max.
If you're the national security advisor, yeah, I think you need to cough up if you've been a foreign agent.
Yeah. 18 U.S.C. 951 is the substantive crime. That is acting as an unauthorized agent of a foreign government. That's a serious offense. That carries a maximum 10 years in prison.
Yeah. And if those charges sound familiar to you, that's because they're the same charges which were brought against Bijan Rafikian, aka Bijan Kian, and that's Flynn's business partner. And he was charged and convicted of unregistered lobbying the U.S. government on behalf of Turkey.
Right. They were working together at the time. Right. And like, I think in our pre-conversations, I'd referred to him as, you know, like Flynn's assistant or lackey. Like, I know they're technically partners, but like Flynn's the senior guy there. Anyway.
Right. It is the Flynn group. I believe it's the Flynn group or the Flynn Intel group.
Yeah, it's not the Kian group. Exactly right. Yeah. Also, weird rabbit trail here at future research. Kian's conviction was overturned by a judge in the Eastern District of Virginia. Then that was appealed by the government to the Fourth Circuit, which reinstated Kian's conviction on March 18th, 2021, and remanded back to the court for sentencing. That was 2 years ago, you know, just about 2 years ago. So I cannot figure out why he hasn't been sentenced by now.
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah, so I'm going to try and figure that one out. That's future homework for me.
Cool. Not for me, dude. Okay, but knock yourself out. Anyway, here's the point. Pretty much everyone, left, right, center, agrees that if you're going to charge Kian, you're going to want to charge Flynn as well because, you know, they were working together. And the government didn't. Instead, they offered him an absolute sweetheart deal from the outset. They charged him solely with a single count of making a false statement under 18 U.S.C. 1001, and they recommended a low-end guideline sentence of 0 to 6 months of incarceration, even before Flynn's cooperation and assistance obligation to the government were completed. That's 0 to 6 months, as opposed to 10-plus years, which is a pretty good deal, especially for a guy who made his name shouting "lock her up" about Hillary Clinton for, you know, that she needed to go to email jail. And that deal will come unraveled after the break.
Yeah, before the break, Liz, you were talking about Flynn's sweetheart deal with the DOJ. And at that time, Flynn was represented by, you know, the OG of coat factory law firms, Covington and Burling itself. And in fact,
I've heard of them.
Friends of mine. Yeah. They got him an amazing result. And I cannot stress this highly enough. Flynn absolutely raced to get this deal signed, done before the DOJ could change its ever loving mind.
Yep.
And in furtherance of that, he waived his right to an indictment from a grand jury, right? He voluntarily pled guilty on an information, right? Just a piece of paper on December 1st, 2017. He was then brought before Judge Emmett G. Sullivan and interrogated at length as to whether that plea was voluntary on January 16th, 2018. And by the way, like, again, that part at least is not special treatment for Michael Flynn. That's a thing federal courts do for every criminal defendant. Not always. Like, that Sullivan's questioning of Flynn went on for 8 pages in the transcript, right? Like, are you absolutely certain? Yeah.
Oh, that
you
was a
want
wild
to
day.
Plead guilty.
Because he wasn't going to give it. I remember that day. Judge Sullivan did not want to give Flynn the low sentence recommended by the Justice Department. He said, are you sure you don't want to go back and cooperate real further? Because if you ask me to sentence you today, I'm not going to give you the deal that the Justice Department is offering. And so Flynn thought about it and decided, in fact, he would go back and cooperate some more so that he could get the benefit of that deal because Judge Sullivan didn't want to give it to him.
Yeah, and put a pin in that.
Yeah. So eventually, though, Flynn made the insane decision to fire Covington and Burling and replace them with, I shit you not, Sidney Powell, which has got to be the single biggest legal downgrade in human history. And around that time, as a total coincidence, I am sure, he began saying stupid shit in public about how new revelations exonerated him, which they did not. And so then Judge Sullivan hauled him back into court and asked him again, hey, you voluntarily pled guilty, right? And okay, now we're going to read some of the transcript. The court says, do you seek an opportunity to withdraw your plea in light of these revelations? Flynn says, I do not, Your Honor. The court says, all right, because you are guilty of this offense. Flynn says, yes, Your Honor. So he is now affirmed on the record again, like, yeah, I totally did it. I'm not trying to screw around here.
Right. And as you suggest, not a close call. And one more thing. I mean, pull the pin on the cooperation. That is just super angrifying. And that is Flynn, as we discussed, pled guilty December of 2017. But he got to stay out of prison in 2017 and 2018 and 2019, because one of the only conditions of his plea deal, as you point out, was that he continue to cooperate fully, truthfully, and forthrightly, as well as assist the government in its ongoing investigation. So the idea was, okay, as you pointed out, Judge Sullivan, slightly skeptical at the outset.
But a little bit.
They're going to, he's going to defer sentencing, wait right. to hear how much Flynn helped the government, and then take that into account in the future. And by the way, right, that years you don't spend in prison, those are good years when you have pled guilty to a crime, right? So
right.
on a scale of 1 to 100, guess how much cooperation and assistance Flynn provided the DOJ?
How about zero?
Oh no. I think the government would have loved zero in hindsight. Like, instead, the government reported with considerable understatement that, quote, Mr. Flynn had not only not substantially assisted it in any matter.
Well, that's okay. zero, right?
No. But also, once he hired Sidney Powell, changed his story, both publicly and in court proceedings, began denying responsibility for his actions, and moved to withdraw the aforementioned multiply voluntarily entered guilty plea. This contradicted Flynn's previous statements to the FBI, his statements to the grand jury in the Bijan Kian case, and in general, you know, rendered his testimony useless, right?
Well, that still sounds like zero.
And was used to impeach the testimony of other witnesses the government intended to call in the Kian case, depriving the government of what it anticipated and described as what would be, quote, the best and most direct evidence of the most crucial contested issue at trial over the most serious charge, right? That's the Section 951 charge against Bijan Kian.
Oh, actually, that seems bad.
Yeah, and it gets worse. So
yes, it does.
I cannot. These words are hard to get out. Not only was the government unable to call Flynn as a witness for the prosecution, not only did Flynn's statements provide the defense counsel with ample opportunity to impeach government witnesses, but Flynn then intervened on behalf of Bijan Kian to be called as a defense witness, an action the DOJ, again, rather mildly described as not only, quote, remarkable, but, quote, wholly inconsistent with assisting, let alone substantially assisting or cooperating in that case, end of real quote.
Yeah, so he wasn't super helpful. And then he also went back on his promise not to withdraw his plea. Yeah. Oh, that's our girl, Sydney. So obviously, Judge Sullivan was not impressed, and he said things that will hopefully be the epitaph on Flynn's tombstone. Let's read them. He said, arguably, that undermines everything this flag over here stands for. Arguably, you sold your country out. Not only did you lie to the FBI, but you lied to senior officials in the Trump transition team at administration. Those lies caused the then vice president-elect, incoming chief of staff, and then press secretary to lie to the American people. That was the lie about whether Flynn had had the conversations with the Russian ambassador,
right.
which Pence and Reince Priebus repeated.
Right.
Because Flynn had said it. Judge Sullivan went on, moreover, you lied to the FBI about three different topics, and you made those false statements while you were serving as the National Security Advisor, the president-elect United States' most senior national security aide. I can't minimize that, right? So that's bad. Judge Sullivan went on, 2 months later, you made false statements in multiple documents filed pursuant to the Foreign Agents Registration Act. So all along, you were an unregistered agent of a foreign country while serving as the national security advisor to the president-elect of the United States.
So, yeah, that is what, by the way, right, uncontested, on the record, agreed, multiply affirmed, that is what Michael Flynn means when he says, I made some, quote, misstatements.
Yeah, he probably just forgot all that stuff. That's been his take the whole time. Anyway, don't take legal advice from a podcast or anything. But if you get a sweetheart deal from the DOJ and then you hire Sidney Powell and not only start lying about your own case, but actively trying to sabotage other criminal prosecutions, the DOJ is almost certainly going to throw the book at you. Actually, I take it back. Do take this legal advice. If you get a sweetheart deal from the DOJ, do the things that the deal requires of you and don't hire Sidney Powell.
Yeah, good advice in the abstract, but chalk up a victory for Team Stupid here, because Flynn did the exact opposite of your good advice. And the result was not 15 years in prison. The result was that corrupt hobgoblin Bill Barr demanded that the government drop its prosecution of Michael Flynn, who, as we said, remained unsentenced thanks to all the cooperation he was not providing.
Yeah.
Procedurally, this was a motion brought pursuant to Rule 48A of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. Now, ordinarily, those motions are filed without prejudice, right? That means the government is dropping the charges right now, but they can come back and charge you again if more evidence comes to light.
Nope.
This one, of course, was filed with prejudice to make sure the government could never prosecute Flynn again on these charges. And it was signed only by an acting political appointee, Tim Shea, not by any of the line prosecutors in the case. Oh, and by the way, on the same day that Tim Shea filed that Rule 48A motion, the lead prosecutor, Special Assistant U.S. Attorney Brandon L. Van Grack, withdrew from the case. And spoiler alert, that got him named as a malefactor in Flynn's loss. Not a defendant. You'll explain the difference. But we will get to that one. So, you know, no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah. And in addition to all of this, Bill Barr had tried to get the U.S. attorney for D.C., Jesse Liu, to intervene in this case and in the case of Roger Stone. And because she wouldn't do it, he fired her. Right.
Right.
Bill Barr was very hot to interfere in these political cases. And he did it. And he's admitted it.
Yeah. But, you know, Bill Clinton once met with Loretta Lynch on the tarmac.
Oh, yeah. No. You know, good point there. Good point. Yeah. Hillary Clinton definitely belongs in email jail. Okay,
yep.
So all of this rigmarole was designed to spare Trump from the political embarrassment of having to pardon Flynn, because the thought was that would be too toxic even for Donald Trump, which, you know, I did just say those words out loud, and perhaps I'm naive, but long story short, Andrew, you and your firm wrote an amicus brief on behalf of the show. Judge Sullivan read it and cited it in his order, and he agreed it was a close call to deny the DOJ's obviously corrupt order. So then Trump turned around and pardoned Flynn anyway. LOL.
Yeah. And of course, you know, naivete all the way around, because Trump not only suffered zero political consequences whatsoever for having done so, but somehow this turned Michael Flynn into like the 2020s version of Oliver North. I have not figured this one out.
Yeah, it's like Ollie North, you know, plus QAnon. Although Ollie North did go on to be the champion of the NRA. So anyway, that brings us to today, where professional faux victim Michael Flynn has now filed an offensively stupid lawsuit against the United States demanding $50 million for, I don't know, not locking him up and throwing away the key. I don't know what he's mad about. Flynn claims he was, quote, improperly and politically targeted because of his lawful association with the 2016 presidential campaign of Donald Trump and his position as national security advisor in the Trump administration, which...
Yeah, those 11 days, right? Like, thank you for your service. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah. The complaint is like full of demonstrably false statements. For instance, Flynn claims that the Justice Department and special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation of him were brought, quote, without probable cause based on deficient information. That's nonsense. I mean, yeah. Mueller had a whole grand jury at his disposal, and Flynn could have, you know, used the process there. He just chose to plead guilty. Furthermore, Flynn claims that FBI Director James Comey, quote, assisted in the decision to prosecute General Flynn without proper basis or probable cause, even as he concedes in the very next sentence that Trump fired Comey on May 9th, 2017. Mueller wasn't even appointed as special counsel until May 17. I do not understand how Comey could have been involved in the prosecution at all, but perhaps that's my own naivete again.
Yeah, that is because you are not considering the fact that linear time has a well-known liberal bias.
Oh, well, good point there. You got me. Anyway, remember, the Russia investigation was initiated because Trump campaign aide George Papadopoulos had bragged to an Australian diplomat. They called him the coffee boy. Anyway, so the coffee boy bragged to this Australian diplomat that Russia was going to release hacked Clinton materials to help the Trump campaign, which it then did. Flynn scoffs that this is hearsay upon hearsay. And indeed, if it were offered in a court of law as proof that Russia actually did hack the DNC emails, he might be right. But that's not the standard to open an investigation, which is why the DOJ's Inspector General report concluded that, quote, the quantum of information articulated by the FBI to open the individual investigations on Papadopoulos, Carter Page, Michael Flynn, and Paul Manafort in August of 2016 was sufficient to satisfy the low threshold established by the department and the FBI. So when Flynn's lawyers say that the investigation, quote, lacked a legitimate investigative predicate, they are lying.
Yeah. And I want to emphasize here that this report was prepared by Bill Barr's Department of Justice, right? Like, that's why you have some of that editorializing, right? Like, not crazed leftist or alternatively, Federalist Society sleeper.
But you repeat
agent.
Yourself.
Like Merrick Garland. Right? Yeah. No, look, like, I guess if your Uncle Frank has drunk enough Kool-Aid that Barr is now also part of the deep state, given that he, you know, sort of cooperated in a self-aggrandizing sort of way with the January 6th committee. But look, Bill Barr's Republican DOJ, Office of the Inspector General, validated the voluntary plea bargain secured by the Republican prosecutors, operating in conjunction with the Republican special counsel Robert Mueller, who was appointed by Republican Attorney General Jeff Sessions and overseen by Republican Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, or, you know, as Flynn's lawyers call them, a cabal of angry Democrats.
Well, they would. Anyway,
I should mention before Jesse Binall sues us for defamation here, Flynn's lawyers did not call them a cabal of angry Democrats in the pleading. That's a Donald Trump thing that I'm sure they have called. But, you know, yeah, I want to be clear for the record what the complaint actually says.
Mm-hmm. Well,
then,
Flynn's lawyers,
bring it on, Jesse.
I think he's got other fish to fry. Anyway, Flynn's lawyers are similarly selective with the facts alleged in this pleading. For instance, they point to Flynn traveling to Moscow and sitting with Putin at a gala as an example of protected First Amendment activity. And he even claims he was, quote, acting as an information gathering agent for the United States, not for Russia, because he did disclose the trip to the U.S. government and talked about it when they asked him about it. He fails to mention, though, that he was paid $45,000 by Russia Today to deliver a speech at that fun little dinner, and that Russia Today is classified as an outlet of the Russian government, which is, you know, a minor detail that he just forgot to mention. Nor does he mention his belated registration as a foreign agent of the Turkish government, which is a tacit acknowledgement both that he'd violated the Foreign Agents Registration Act and that he'd been acting as an agent of a foreign government just months before he became the National Security Advisor.
It takes what I'm going to describe as a lot of nerve to claim that, quote, General Flynn's status as an advisor to a presidential candidate is not a proper justification to investigate him as a Russian spy.
Yeah. I mean, I think from where I come from, we call that chutzpah. But it does help. It does help if you've had your capacity for shame surgically removed.
Yeah.
Which he clearly has. So Flynn also claimed that, quote, the supposed ties to state-affiliated entities apparently amounted to speaking fees that General Flynn received as part of his speaking circuit after leaving government service, which is amazing.
Yeah, nobody ever gets bribed that way. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Literally the day of the 2016 election, Flynn published an editorial in The Hill calling for Fethullah Gulen's extradition without disclosing that he was being paid by the Turkish government. And while he was being paid by the Turkish government, he sat in on multiple classified briefings with Donald Trump, who was then a candidate. So this guy was a walking national security risk before he got caught making secret deals with the Russian government, something he characterizes in his brief as, quote, perfectly appropriate diplomatic talks. And that's despite the fact that he was a civilian with no diplomatic role negotiating to undermine the foreign policy of the sitting president. Nor does he explain why he made repeated public denials of those perfectly appropriate talks or why he lied about them to the FBI. Oh, sorry. I mean, he forgot about them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the obvious explanation. Who can possibly remember all of the foreign autocrats that are paying you money to, you know, say what you just by pure happenstance happened to put in an editorial in public? Yeah, no.
Yeah. I mean, look, the complaint is ridiculous, which is why I read them from the front to the back. And it bears noting that this is ridiculous in exactly the same way that Trump's idiotic RICO suit against Hillary Clinton was ridiculous. You guys remember that one. Although it's mercifully 100 pages shorter, and it only sues the federal government. So I guess he's not likely to get the same $1 million sanctions penalty because the government's not generally in the habit of doing that. But incidentally, Flynn is represented here by Jared Robert, and he is an attorney in the office of Kraken alumni Jesse Beadle, who represents Trump in a bunch of idiotic partisan bullshit suits. He's like, I mean, okay, credit where due. He is like a couple clicks above Alina Habba in the pecking order, but his record is not great. And Roberts, who is apparently like the guy in, you know, Jesse Beadle's outfit who is barred in Florida, where this dumb thing is filed, is also the attorney of record on Clinton's appeal to the 11th Circuit in that RICO case.
Ooh.
Yeah. He's appealing the sanctions because he doesn't actually want to pay the $1 million. So anyway, hi, Jesse Beanall. Small world.
Again, Opening Arguments Media LLC is a California limited liability company. Feel free.
Yeah. So let me just read one more passage from this lawsuit because it's so delightfully bonkers. Here we go. It says, the executive office of the president under President Obama was so distraught by General Flynn's selection as NSA that they calculatingly and with actual malice and corrupt motives conspired to and did use the tremendous power of their positions in the executive office of the president and their influence over the DOJ and FBI to investigate, entrap, and prosecute General Flynn. Defendants' agents... Yeah, no, linear time once more. Defendants' agents executed these actions knowingly, purposely, and in complete disregard of General Flynn's constitutional and other legal rights. So, to summarize, please. Yeah.
No, like, again, linear time, right? Like, Michael Flynn was National Security Advisor under President Trump. Like, he cannot simultaneously be the NSA and also have Obama be in charge of the Department of Justice. I don't know. These are the people that believe there was a, you know, secret child raping cabal below, you know, in the basement of a pizza parlor that lacks a basement. So,
Michael Flynn definitely supported the Pizzagate conspiracy theory. But,
Anyway,
this guy legit believes that Robert Mueller, who was appointed by Trump's own guy, Deputy AG Rod Rosenstein, was part of a plot by Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton to get him and get Trump. Or, I mean, I don't even know if he really believes it. But look, he's willing to say so in a federal filing. And again, that is why I read these cases front to back, because they're not real lawsuits. They just aren't. I mean, the supposed tort here, the false, reckless, abusive, and malicious felony criminal prosecution, it doesn't even matter. So it's never going to happen. The $50 million is never going to happen. And okay, I guess we need to talk about the law. So why don't we find out why this is never, never in a million years going to happen after the break?
Okay. All right. Before the break, you teased, and now we get to the actual torts that have been alleged in this lawsuit, which are two claims pursuant to the Federal Tort Claims Act, that is 28 U.S.C. Chapter 171. And we have talked about this law before. It is where the United States has waived part of its sovereign immunity, right? Like the 13th century Saxony principle, you can't sue the king. Okay. Unless the king allows itself to be sued for certain claims, which it has. So Flynn has sued the United States. And then starting on page 5, right, he lists the, quote, wrongdoers on behalf of the United States. And this is just your typical right-wing enemies list, including the DOJ, the FBI, Robert Mueller, Jim Comey, Andy McCabe, Pete Strzok, Lisa Page, and, of course, former line prosecutor Andrew Van Grack.
Well, you wouldn't want to leave that guy out. Yes. So Flynn then alleges that this rogues gallery engaged in, quote, malicious prosecution, which is count one, and abusive process, which is count two, by, you know, doing the stuff we just told you about for half an hour. So here, let's quote from Flynn's lawyers directly. Paragraph 155 is count one. Defendant maliciously investigated and prosecuted General Flynn by initiating and continuing a baseless counterintelligence investigation and by filing a criminal information lacking probable cause. Okay, no, but let's go on. Paragraph 58, count two. The named wrongdoers abused their official positions and authority to bring process against General Flynn for an improper motive. And if you're wondering, wait, can you sue a prosecutor for bringing valid charges against you because she also hates you? The answer to that is no, you cannot.
Yeah, but look, we're not going to get there. Not even close. Liz, as you just read from the literal horse's mouth, right? Like the harm that General Flynn alleges that he suffered is that the government, by and through that enemies list, started an improper investigation, invited him for what he alleges was a disingenuous interview as a perjury trap, and then maliciously brought charges against him, you know, to which he pled guilty. Let's not dwell on that one, right? And the problem is that Operation Crossfire Hurricane was initiated August of 2016. Flynn was brought in for his FBI interview, in which he definitely 100% perjured himself.
No,
on
no, he
January
just forgot.
24th. Yeah. Uh-huh. On January 24th, 2017, the very latest that any of these allegedly bad actors acting on behalf of the government could have allegedly acted badly towards General Flynn is November 20th, 2017, which is when the DOJ filed its criminal investigation. And at that point, right? Oh, okay, fine. If you want to prolong it as much as possible, let's take it out to the very last possible date, January 16th, 2018, right? That's the date that Flynn pled guilty. And remember that for purposes of statute of limitations, that begins with the discovery rule, right? Like when you are aware that the person who you allege has done a bad thing to you has done that bad thing. Well, like when you sign the little piece of paper that says, I agree, I did the crime, like that the point at which you could say, I'm no longer aware of this has probably passed. Yeah.
Yeah. And not for nothing, but on that piece of paper, he explicitly waived any right to come back and complain about his treatment by the government or complain that he'd been denied Brady materials. So, yep. I mean, you know, another little problem. I mean, look, least of the problem here, right? But so So that's 4 to 5 years ago or more. And the Federal Tort Claims Act, which people call FATSA, which is rude and fat-shaming. Ooh. But anyway, it very clearly has a
Did you say fascinating? Okay.
No, I said it's fat-shaming.
Oh, I thought you said which is fascinating, which would have been a pretty... pretty good pun. I like that. Anyway.
Okay.
Keep going.
Anyway, FATSA has a 2-year statute of limitations. So it's 28 U.S.C. section 2401. And subsection B says, quote, a tort claim against the United States shall be forever barred unless it is presented in writing to the appropriate federal agency within 2 years after such a claim accrues. And spoiler alert, this statute has a second half, and we'll get to that in a hot second.
Yeah. Okay. So how do you present a claim in writing to the appropriate federal agency? Well, turns out you file a Form 95, claim for damage, injury, or death. And this form is front and back, 1.5 pages, you know, that plus half page of instruction. I will link to it in the show notes. With zero legal experience, you can file this one out, file it online in, you know, half an hour or less, right?
And so be right back.
Flynn.
Yeah. File a complaint.
Did in fact fill one out, or at least he says he did, right? We have to presume that his claims are true for purposes of a motion to dismiss, paragraph 152 of the complaint. The problem is that Flynn alleges that he presented that Form 95 to the Department of Justice, quote, by letter dated February 24th, 2022. So I know I promised there would be no math, but 2022 minus 2 is 2020. And 2020, you will recognize from the last 49 minutes, is when Bill Barr's DOJ started doing corrupt stuff to benefit Michael Flynn, including, you know, Tim Shea filing that bullshit Rule 48 motion to dismiss, and ultimately Donald Trump pardoning him. So, you know, you can't sue the DOJ for trying to help you.
Yeah. All right. Look, remember, I speak crazy. It's one of my superpowers. And it's, you know, a job skill important to my other day job. So here's, let's look at paragraph 139. Flynn alleges U.S. District Court Judge Emmett Sullivan refused to approve the DOJ's dismissal of its prosecution, necessitating an appeal to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals by General Flynn. The D.C. Circuit initially ordered Judge Sullivan to dismiss the charges and case against General Flynn in its entirety. In response, Judge Sullivan, the supposedly disinterested judge who mused aloud about whether the Department of Justice could charge General Flynn for treason, it could not, and who stated on the record to General Flynn that, quote, arguably you sold your country out, retained counsel, literally becoming an interested party, and petitioned for en banc review from the D.C. Circuit. After en banc review, the D.C. Circuit remanded the case to Judge Sullivan for appropriate dispatch, who continued to drag his feet on dismissal of the case.
Okay, A plus for translation, but there are only, you know, at least four problems with this argument, okay?
Right.
So first, this is essentially a disqualification argument, which you will not be surprised Michael Flynn raised and lost on. Second, it's paragraph 139, but as Flynn admits two paragraphs later in his own complaint, Judge Sullivan ultimately did dismiss the charges against him, right? Although his lawyers note that Flynn's opinion, quote, could not resist taking a few parting partisan jabs at General Flynn, end of quote, which, you know, also not a tort for which the U.S. has allowed itself to be sued, right? Third, this kind of weird, like, I sort of feel like we're helping Jesse Bienal's law firm here, but Judge Sullivan...
I'm sure he will not see it that way.
Yeah, you get one free amendment as of right to your complaint in federal court. So, you know, there's this, take this freebie. Judge Sullivan is not listed as one of the alleged wrongdoers in that page five, like, rogues gallery. Nope. And fourth, and why I'm comfortable giving the advice, I think the reason that Judge Sullivan is not listed as one of the wrongdoers is that, you know, you can't sue a sitting judge for, quote, dragging his feet before ultimately giving you the relief that you've sought. Otherwise, I don't know, I would have sued every judge that I've ever been in front of because, you know, look, that's what federal court does. Right? So, look,
right.
There is no chance, none, zero, zip, nada, that Flynn's Form 95 was filed timely.
Totally.
But even if it was, I still don't think this lawsuit would survive. And look, this is going to require a little bit more to unpack, but I think it's worth going there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And even I understood it, and I am not Madam Procedure. So here we go. The first part, everybody's got their strengths. The first part of it is that it's not enough to sue under the Federal Tort Claims Act to just file that Form 95. The government has to deny your claim, right? So you can't just say, I handed in my homework and here I am at the courthouse. You have to actually get adjudication from the government. That's called administrative exhaustion. And okay, it makes sense. If you can just ask the government to make it all better and they do, then you don't have a case. And that's the first half of 28 U.S.C. section 2675. It says, an action shall not be constituted upon a claim against the United States unless the claimant shall have first presented the claim to the appropriate federal agency, i.e., turned in the Form 95, and his claim shall have been finally denied by the agency in writing and sent by certified or registered mail.
Okay. So first, just to get this out of the way, I want to make a bad legal argument that is nevertheless true, right? To make sure that people know we're making the good one. And that is, the government hasn't yet responded to Flynn's Form 95. And that's probably just spitballing here because low-level staffers at the DOJ are still passing it around via email and laughing, right? Like, I'm not entirely certain, but that's where I put my chips on, right? So you might be thinking, hey, that claim hasn't been finally denied by the agency, so, you know, Flynn just has to wait until they do that. But some of you have probably figured out why that's a bad argument, right? And that's because one could easily imagine a corrupt administration that hates you, right, could literally just like sit on your Form 95 forever, for 8 years, right? And so the statute of limitations tolls during that period. So you'd still be able to sue when eventually that administration changes, you know, if the new administration remembers or even wants to adjudicate your claim. But like, it's hard to find evidence and witnesses, you know, a decade later. So that would be bad.
Yeah, and just to double back a second, I figured that the DOJ just ignored Flynn's complaint because it was so totally untimely. Although, you know, I'm cool with imagining Merrick Garland and Lisa Monaco laughing about it over coffee. You know, good visual. But actually, the law does protect you from the government deliberately slow walking your claim, which is the second half of the statute. That's 28 USC 2675A. The failure of an agency to make a final disposition of a claim within 6 months after it is filed shall, at the option of the claimant any time thereafter, be deemed a final denial of the claim for purposes of this section. And that's what Flynn's alleging in paragraph 153 of his complaint, that the government did not respond in 6 months, so he can deem it a final denial. He can say, close enough, I got my final adjudication by the U.S. government.
Right. The problem is that if you rely on the deemed denial provision, it triggers the second half of the statute of limitations, 28 U.S.C. section 2401, that you put a pin in, right? Here's essentially how it works in practice. You file your Form 95. You can then either choose to wait around until the government responds to your claim in writing, and if they deny your claim, sue, even if that takes you outside the statute of limitations, or you can say after 6 months, if they haven't responded, that's enough. This is deemed a final denial. But if you do that, you then have to file your complaint within 6 months of that denial. And I just need to say, as somebody who practices administrative law, right, like that's an exceptionally long time to file a complaint after an administrative exhaustion, right? Like if you play in this sandbox, you know, after a denial, like, yeah, it's time to get to court.
Right. So here's that section, 28 U.S.C. section 2401. Or unless the action is begun within 6 months after the date of mailing by certified or registered mail of notice of final denial of the claim by the agency to which it was presented. And so, okay, more math. Flynn says he brought his claim administratively on February 24th, 2022. 6 months after that gets you to August 24, 2022, and another 6 months gets you to February 24, 2023. And this case was filed on March 3rd, 2023, which is after February 24th. Womp womp.
Indeed it is. So let me quickly anticipate two counterarguments, right? Because they're seemingly plausibly, facially valid, but wrong, right? So first, the FTCA has language that lets you deem a denial, quote, at any time after the 6 months, right? So you might make that argument. And second, the statute, as you've said, right, the 2401 begins with the disjunctive, right? It says that you have 2 years or unless action is begun within 6 months. So that seems to imply that you could meet one of those deadlines, which they have, which they haven't, but they allege they have, the 2 years before filing the Form 95. But it turns out that courts, when they interpret the FTCA, have rejected definitively both of those arguments. And this is kind of the inverse of the discussion we had on the deemed denied rationale, right? Like there, that was the government could just sit on your claim forever and you'd never have a cause of action. Here, it's the reverse, right? Because this is a waiver of sovereign immunity by the government, it should be and is construed by the courts as narrowly as possible, right? Mm-hmm. And so reading those limitations into the law would have let plaintiffs effectively evade any statute of limitations, right? So let's quote from a 2018 decision out of the Third Circuit. This is called Sconyers versus United States. It says, the alternative would effectively eliminate any court deadline. It would mean that, one, claimants could wait as long as they wished before presenting tort claims to agencies, so long as they filed the claim within 6 months of any denial, right? Like, if it's an or, then you don't have to satisfy the 2 years requirement, right? Mm-hmm. Or, Two, they could present their claims to agencies within 2 years of accrual and then wait as long as they wish to file suit in district court. But no one doubts that Congress meant to impose some time limitation on administrative and court filings, and if we left the act without a meaningful time limitation, we would be taking it upon ourselves to extend the waiver of sovereign immunity beyond that which Congress intended. And the court continues, our holding today is consistent with our strict construction of the FTCA and with how we have described the FTCA's filing requirements in the past. It also aligns this court's precedent with every other circuit to have considered the issue, each of which has held that both conditions must be satisfied. And then there are a bunch of cites to the 1st, 2nd, 5th, 9th, and DC circuits. So bottom line, this case is multiply time barred, even if it wasn't stupid, which it is.
Oh, it definitely, definitely is.
And that is going to do it for today's episode, unless, of course, you're a patron, at which point, hey, stick around for the bonus content where we go down rabbit trails involving personal jurisdiction, Mark Meadows. I explained what a verified complaint. Look, you're not going to want to miss this.
You got into Harvard Law?
What, like it's hard?
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Liz. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it would be a big help if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Spotify, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @openargs. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, with assistance from Teresa Gomez and Deborah Smith.
Opening Arguments is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, copyright 2023, all rights reserved.